Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Okay, what's the number one reason you should try Instacart? Shopping over 1.5 million unique products from over 1,000 retailers and get everything delivered right to your door in as fast as 1 hour, all in one app. So you can spend more time with the ones who matter most. Visit instacart.com to get free delivery on your first three orders. Offer valid for a limited time, $10 minimum per order. Additional terms apply.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Grutter versus Bollinger, 2003, before the Supreme Court, regarded these many years later as a landmark case to do with affirmative action in student admissions. The result was a 5-4 success to maintain what was understood at the time as affirmative action in the favor of diversity. Many years later, these words are much admired and at the same time debated, because the Supreme Court in these last days on Halloween 2022 revisited much of the same story, this time not about the University of Michigan or the universities in California, but about the private institution of Harvard University and the University of North Carolina. I welcome Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution, writing most recently at Defining Ideas about the present case before the Supreme Court, just argued, will be decided in the spring. Students for Fair Admissions Incorporated versus President and Fellows of Harvard College, and Students for Fair Admissions Incorporated versus the University of North Carolina. Richard, a very good evening to you. The Grutter case is often mentioned as the most telling version of affirmative action in this century. It's famous and noted especially for Justice Sandra Day O'Connor's majority decision, in which she said 25 years. What 25 years was she referring to? And how does that inform today's oral argument before the Supreme Court? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Well, Sandra Day O'Connor's always regarded herself as a balancer. And indeed she was. She always tried to find why it is that you're supposed to do something, but not supposed to do too much. And so when she came to write this opinion, there were two things that heavily influenced her. One, which is not widely regarded, is that there were extremely strong briefs submitted by both military people on the one hand and corporate CEO types on the other, saying, look, we can't run our particular world unless we have some kind of an affirmative action program. And she's very much interested in institutional stability, so that weighed very heavily on. But then the question is how long, a question which has been asked all the time, including in the two most recent cases. And so she just threw out a number, and the number said in 25 years, we suspect that we will not have to make a case for this stuff. We won't need it. It will disappear. Even at the time, it was perfectly clear that the statement was wildly optimistic and wrong. One of the reasons we could say that with some confidence is that the affirmative action programs basically came into academics the same year Richard Epstein did, 1968. And at that particular time, I was quickly put in charge of an admissions committee in 1969, a young man, 26 years of age, that had to deal with this question. And so you took some look at the numbers. And there was just a very large gap between the SATs or the LSATs or the minority law students and those of your conventional white students at the time. Asian students were not much in the picture back in 1969, although there were some of them there. So, I mean, you look at this stuff and then you say to yourself, well, how are you going to climb out of this hole? Well, if you're going to do it, you now have basically 35 years or so between the 68 type of situations in 2003, and you check to see what the progress is, and it's annoyingly slow. Very little improvement seems to be made. There are all sorts of very complicated explanations as to why this might or might not be the case, including do people want to go into law school? Do they want to go into business? It's very clear in terms of the welcoming of black students into the professions, all of the professions, The world is very different in 2003 than it is in 1968. It's no longer a novelty. Affirmative action is very heavily established, virtually up and down our institutions. But if you're trying to figure out from the numbers, it can't be there. So you look at the O'Connor numbers and you say to yourself, what's the basis on which she thinks there's going to be a change? And you really can't find anything, i.e. a past trend that continues into the future. And now we're 19 years into the next period, and essentially the numbers look pretty much the way they had done before, which then leads to a following very anguished discussion that takes place. There's some people would say we need 6 more years to see whether or not this is true. I regard that as whistling Dixie. I don't think it's going to change. But on the other hand, if you're in favor of the current programs, you get another 6 years, then there's a change in political climate or the composition of the Supreme Court, and you may be able to extend it for another 6 years or even longer than that. So that's the one side. And then on the other side, and you could hear from the conservatives on the court, just how long does this have to go? Because they're against the forever program, and nobody can tell them what a viable limit starts to look about. And so their attitude is, we don't need to wait 25 years to realize that this prediction is false. We know right now that it's false. And so what we have to think about is what we're going to do, and we think we're rather going to end this. There is a very strong colorblind streak, stronger on the court than it is in the public at large, and that kind of streak on the court says what we have to do is we have to go colorblind, find other kinds of adjustments to make, recognize that the world is not going to end, because if indeed there is an increase, as there surely will be to some extent, of qualified minority students, the system is perfectly able to take them. They may not all go to the elite institution, but what they will do is they will go to places where they can thrive. And there was this well-known study by Sander and by Stuart Taylor, which essentially indicated that minority students who go to second-tier institutions and get strong education do far better than those who go to a first-tier institution and cannot fight against the tide. They have more self-confidence and they get a more sound education. And so don't think of this as an institutional disaster. Think of this as a situation where if the elite schools are trying to get a large number of minority students in, they're upsetting the entire market, so that if you went back to a more colorblind standard on this stuff, strangely, you'd get a better set of national results, even though many elite institutions would have lower levels of minority participation.
If I understand correctly, Professor, the Supreme Court then inherits of the 20 of the years since 2003 as a measure. It's not 25 years yet. That is true, but the Supreme Court inherits that. And in the oral arguments in your reporting for Defining Ideas, no mention was made of the graduation rates, class rank, choice of major, or income across students of different races in these intervening years since 2003, nor, I'm supposing, since 1968 when you begin. That seems extremely relevant if you're looking for progress. You also note that Justice Kagan, in the oral arguments in 2022, just recently, made the proposition that only elite academic institutions are capable of putting people into their proper career path. Is that how she maintains this need to talk about Harvard and North Carolina?
And Princeton, for where she went to undergraduate school. I mean, I think there is a sense of elitism on the part of the Supreme Court. I mean, I work in an institution where elitism is, I think, very much part of the game. I meet the elite qualifications, having gone to Columbia, Oxford, and Yale. But what you always try to do in my business is to figure out kids who come in from alternative paths who have the intellectual determination to succeed and try to help them. And so, I mean, I think, in fact, some of the strongest students going into public lives are going to be coming from evangelical Christian-type schools. So when I look at my very strong student, they come from such places as, Grove City College, Hillsdale, and so forth, King's College in New York City. And these are the best students at the University of Chicago Law School, right there among them. And what's happened is they've had very strong fundamental educations, and that holds up very, very well as you advance. One of the problems that Harvard has to face and UNC has to face is you continue with these very strong affirmative action programs and make it, is now commonly understood that the hardest thing about Harvard is getting in, not doing well there because nobody seems to much care. Now, what happens is you now see, and many of my students have told me, why would I want to go to Harvard? If they're going to have this kind of program and this kind of sensibility, I'd rather get a good education and try to make my way in the world elsewhere. And what we know is, on both liberal and conservative side, if you're an employer, you're always hungry to find really good talent. The thought that somehow or other, if you come from Penn State as opposed from the University of Pennsylvania, you will be forever ignored is a fantasy. And these kids come out there, and the key thing to understand is you apply for 20 jobs, and if the guy from Penn gets 7 offers and takes one, and the guy from Penn State offer takes one, gets one and takes one, they're both in the business. And then the question, how they go after that, people care amazingly little about what your undergraduate credentials are when it comes to the evaluations that are made 2, 3, 4, 5 in years when they have direct observations inside the workplace. And so, of course, other people can come up from the outside. I mean, I remember, you know, my father's generation, they talked a lot about discrimination at Harvard in the 1920s, if you recall. And Seth Waxman, himself Jewish, basically apologized on behalf of Harvard for what Lowell did, the President Lowell did back in the 1920s. Well, in the 1920s, my father graduated from City College in 1928. And it turns out the academic quality in City College, which was probably 70 or 80% Jewish at that time, was a hell of a lot stronger than it was at Harvard at that particular period. And those kids all became very powerfully, upwardly mobile. And so, you know, I just don't believe this cut that where you go to school really matters. I think it's what you learn that matters. I think signaling certainly helps you, which is what Harvard or UNC supplies, but it only helps you for the first job. After that, you're going to be on your own, and your performance inside the profession is a better predictor of your future performance inside the profession than any test that you have, any grade point that you have, or anything that you did 5 years ago. So I think she's just wrong about the way it is now. To an elite institution like the Supreme Court, we only have 9 people. It's not a very big market. Yeah, you may see a certain degree of elitism, but if you're looking at the great American corporations and so forth, there are not enough students from the Ivy League to staff all the positions that happen. If you take the Ivy League school and say there are 8 of them and they average, say, 1,500 students a year, you're talking about 12,000 kids coming out of the market on an annual basis, many of whom don't want to go into business and so forth. There's lots of room and lots of firms for lots of other people. And the kids who are hungry and smart will do very fine in a competitive market.
I'm speaking to Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution, writing about the oral arguments just held before the Supreme Court on 2 cases about affirmative action. I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. The world of fast fashion has complicated clothing production by shipping cheap parts around the world to whoever can sew them the cheapest. And now you, the consumer, are paying the price with rising costs. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. Skip the tariff and snag yourself American-made clothing with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. The world of fast fashion has complicated clothing production by outsourcing around the world to whoever can sew them the cheapest. And now you, the consumer, are paying the price with rising costs. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. So when you buy from American Giant, you're taking a stand for hardworking people, local communities, and quality clothes. American Giant directly supports American manufacturers and ensures you aren't footing that tariff bill. Support American-made, tariff-free clothing with American Giant with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.